Well, well, well. Thank you for joining me today. Everyone, it has been just a whirlwind of a week as we have all been consumed, swept up in this great mystery that's washed over all of us, which is where the fuck is Kate Middleton? So as you probably all know, I have taken to Instagram and TikTok and created right now, it is a 12-part series on the whereabouts of Kate Middleton and the mystery of her disappearance. I, like everyone, just really assumed everything was fine up until a few days ago. I remember when they released the fake photo of her, which I didn't know was fake, by the way. So they release a photo of her. It's her with her kids. I don't really think anything of it. I'm honestly not good at paying that close of attention to visual details. So I didn't notice much. I just saw the photo, whatever. You know, they said William took it. I figured she was fine. Well, cut to a couple hours later and a slow drip in my feed of all of the Photoshop gaffes. And then when AP issued the kill notice to retract the photo, basically saying this photo is fake, alarm bells really went off in my head because I was like, okay, basically these journalistic institutions, they're saying that the palace is lying. And we have not seen Kate since Christmas. Yes, there's that really fuzzy photo of her in the car with her mom in Windsor, but I guess I honestly just don't trust that photo. It kind of doesn't look like her to me. Something is just so off. So when I realized that virtually everyone, not just conspiracy quacks, but virtually everyone agreed that Kensington Palace created a fake photo and sent it out, I realized that something was seriously off with Kate Middleton and her whereabouts. And I needed to uncover this mystery. So right now, everyone on TikTok and on Instagram, I have a 12-part series. It's 12 parts right now on where the fuck is Kate Middleton. So I urge you to check out that Instagram and TikTok series, share it if you want to support the pod, would love it. And I know this is going to be so frustrating, but I can't talk about it more on this recording. And the reason for that is very simple. Chandler is not with us right now. She is in Cabo. Someone's like, we need a wellness check on Chandler. Never mind Kate. Where the F is Chandler during all of this? During Lauren's wild tear on Instagram. Well, Chandler is sunning in Cabo with 2G, basically no cellular service. I don't think she has any idea what I've been up to. So she's going to have a fun moment when her phone refreshes, you know, she's back in Los Estados Unidos. And anyway, I want to get into this with Chandler on Friday's episode. So I really want to have a full discussion with Chandler, discuss the timelines. I mean, I have more that I have not discussed on Instagram because I think there's stuff that's super sensitive about Kate Middleton and about Prince William. And I'm just not comfortable necessarily talking about it with a front-facing camera on social media. So on Friday, Chandler and I are going to drop a Where the Fuck is Kate Middleton episode where we get into all of these details. And I'm super excited for that. That's going to drop on Friday. And it is going to be our Patreon episode, but it is going to be available to everyone. And just a disclaimer to the Patreonies, we'll make it up to you. We'll give you your own exclusive content at some point this month that makes up for that. But, you know, when there's these moments when everyone is captivated by something, as a podcast, we just have to try to share our thoughts and our hot takes and really the gospel and message of Pop Apologist with as many as we can. So while we're not going to talk about where the F Kate Middleton is on this episode, you have to wait a couple of days for the full chat with me and Chandler. I'm recording this right now on Tuesday, but I'm flying to New York tomorrow. So I'm going to record that with Chandler in person at her apartment. I'm really excited for that. But in the meantime, we have a very good episode for you. So I'm really excited about this episode. It is a deep dive and exploration of Anne Hathaway. Now, I honestly did not expect to be so riveted by this story. When Chandler first was like, I think we should do a deep dive on why people hate Anne Hathaway, I was just like, ugh, boring. But when I was reading through the research, I found myself completely consumed. You're going to be shocked when you hear who Anne Hathaway dated, okay? Let's just say the FBI is involved. It is a crazy story. Also, I think we do a good job of distilling why she's so off-putting and if this is a true character flaw or if it's just something where maybe everyone's a little sexist, maybe everyone's a little shallow, or all three. So if you want to get to the heart of the modern question of why are people so put off and polarized by the brunette, raven-haired beauty, Anne Hathaway, I urge you to keep listening to this episode. You will not be disappointed. The couple met in New York at a gala where they immediately connected. Anne said it was love at first sight. My boyfriend is incredible in a lot of ways. Their relationship ended dramatically when he was arrested on charges of defrauding investors out of millions of dollars in a scheme in which he posed as the Vatican's chief financial officer. So it was reported that the FBI confiscated Anne's private journals from her time with him.
Not her journals.
Well, 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 Chandler, the great audience, the good people listening to Pop Apologists, welcome back to the show.
I'm here. I am not going to lie. I'm so tired and I don't frankly really want to be here, but I'm here and I'm excited because there are good topics to get into today. I'm just a little tired.
Okay, well, Chandler, I'm here to perk you right up because we have a lot of work to do together on this podcast.
Perk me up.
And with our audience today, we're kind of doing a different little deep dive, different little approach to the episode. Okay. So a lot of times our deep dives, they center around the great American romances of red-blooded Americans like JFK and Carolyn Bessette.
Yeah, yeah.
They focus on the love life of Gwyneth Paltrow.
I mean, important topics, hard-hitting journalism.
I mean, where CNN is falling short, we're picking up the slack.
Exactly. In this day and age where mainstream media, MSM, as it's known, really fails us. Yeah, we're picking up the slack, as you said.
Chandler, you're so absolutely correct. Where mainstream media is failing us when it comes to telling the truth.
Telling the truth.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Telling the truth, number
holding
one.
Power to account. I won't even tell you what mainstream media and outlet doesn't do that anymore.
Dad could really get on here and call all the mainstream outlets to task, Chandler, for the grave injustices.
I mean, he would love nothing more.
He would love nothing more. But here we are, doing our good service. And today, instead of doing a exploration of someone's love life or a love affair, we're going to do a little bit more of a psychological evaluation. Okay.
Oh, great.
It's a little bit more of a psychological evaluation of the celebrity at large and then also the American public, because this celebrity inspires a lot of consternation, a lot of ire, a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. And so we need to examine, why does a celebrity provoke this reaction in us? Is it justified? Is it warranted? Does it say more about us than them? And I won't beleaguer this any further.
Beleaguer. Okay.
Excuse me. I won't belabor this any further. Thank you, Chandler. Today, we are here to discuss one Anne Hathaway. Because here's the thing about Anne Hathaway. I am, some would say, the mature age of 33. Some would say the tender age of 33. Whichever, you know, whichever perspective you have. At 33, I have arrived at a place in my life where it's unclear to me why Anne Hathaway kind of annoys me, but she does.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, maybe that says more about you than it does about Anne Hathaway.
But here's the thing, Chandler. No man is an island, and certainly not me in this quandary, because so many people feel the same way. I'm not the first person to be bugged by Anne Hathaway.
I mean, can we just start? Can I just say what comes to mind when I think about being bugged at Anne Hathaway? The first thing that comes to mind, thing that comes to mind is, stay right there. I will come to you. We're going to be very calm. Stay right there. Yeah.
Here's the thing. Chandler is describing, everyone, a recent viral TikTok or video, if you did not see it, where Anne Hathaway put up her palm to everyone in front of her, to people just on the street wanting her to sign autographs, wanting to take her photo, and just was telling them to calm down. She said, calma, calma, calma.
Is that what she was really saying?
Yes, calm. What did you think she was saying?
Well, I know. I thought you were saying calma. Like
calma,
with an A at the
calma.
End.
I think it's like in Italian.
Oh, I didn't realize she was in Italy.
She's in Italy. So she's speaking Italian.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, that's also another word you're messing up today.
Chandler doesn't speak any foreign languages. So she forgets that everyone doesn't just speak English.
Neither do you.
Which is embarrassing giving so... Never mind. Let's not get into that.
Calma.
Anyway,
I will come to you.
It was kind of a gaffe.
I think, from a lot of people's perspectives, because she seemed very patronizing. She said, well, I can't sign for everyone, but I want you to have something.
So yes. She let
people take a photo.
I mean, I think as well, there was something about it where she thought she was like Cleopatra or something. Like, I am mm-hmm. Jesus Christ. You are not, you can't touch my robe.
There was certainly, I think, an energy to her being like Beyonce or, you know, she's the biggest star in the world.
I mean, and we don't have to get too deep on this, but I get it. It's a dangerous world out there for celebrities, but still, so that was just, she's unlikable.
Here's the thing with Anne Hathaway is that she, in certain situations, has been deeply unlikable.
And deeply.
Charitable watchers or viewers or listeners might have a different take. And I'm going to get into those opinions and points of view because this is not a biased report. But I think it's important to examine this woman, Anne Hathaway.
Right. Okay, let's examine her. Yeah, I'm excited. I think she's a celebrity who I used to like know a lot about or not know a lot about, but I used to see a lot more. And then she kind of like slid under the radar and then she's had a resurgence.
She has had a renaissance, but I almost feel like her renaissance has very quickly turned into another fall from grace. Because if you remember, like 6 months ago, people were just could not shut up about how hot Anne Hathaway was.
Right, right. Her fashion. Yeah.
Just looking so good. And then there's been a few gaffes where she's back to, I think, being ridiculed.
Calma.
Anyway, we're not here to ridicule or make fun of or tease. We're here to examine the culture, okay?
Yeah.
Provide a report. Mm-hmm. This is scholarship. This is not gossip. This is truly academic.
Yeah.
So let's proceed. So Chandler and everyone listening, on November 12th, 1982, in New York, a child was born. And that is...
Oh. She's from New York City. That also explains a lot.
Well, she was born in New York, but she did move to New Jersey when she was six. So
kind of
unfortunate for her flexing, you know, at dinner parties because she always has to have that asterisk. She's not fully just from New York.
New Jersey is lovely. New Jersey is very green. Okay.
It's very green, but it's not being from Manhattan.
It's true. It's true. Please proceed.
Okay. And as a gal from Laguna Niguel, California, San Clemente, California, I'm not saying that with a trace of my own pomp and circumstance. Let me just say that. Okay. So Anne Jacqueline Hathaway Chandler was a child born into the world in New York on November 12th, 1982. She's the middle child. So she has two brothers on each side. Her dad, Gerald, is an attorney. So Chandler, she's a fellow daughter of an officer of the court.
Okay? Wow.
We probably would have a lot in common with her.
So much in common. We should reach out, see if she wants to come on the podcast and talk about it.
Absolutely. I should see if her dad needs to offer financing. She could be
retained finance for her father, for Gerald.
Exactly. I need to reach out to Anne. Anyway, she could be a good lead gen source for me. Okay. I need to talk to you about a stunning experience I had. I got a massage yesterday and I took an early bird gummy an hour before my massage. 30 minutes into my massage, I'm starting to nod off. I never nap. I never fall asleep during massages. I was so relaxed and I was getting concerned. I'm like, why am I falling asleep? And then I remembered it was the early bird.
Like, oh, yeah.
I can't even describe to you guys how good an early bird gummy plus massage is. It already makes you feel so like warm and melty and gooey. And then to be getting a massage, it's a peak experience.
No, that sounds peak. I need to try that immediately. I cannot say enough good things about early bird. It is something I never want to run out of. Mm-hmm. I love knowing that if I need to get a good night's sleep, I've got it. And if I just want to kind of take the edge off while I watch a show or, you know, just want to scroll on Reels, it's there for me.
You guys, the great thing about early bird gummies is that they are a recreational hemp product and contain 2.5 milligrams of natural THC and 12.5 milligrams of CBD in each gummy.
So everyone go to earlybirdcbd.com and use the code popapologist20 for 20% off.
earlybirdcbd.com, popapologist20 for 20% off.
Lauren, I got this text from my friend last night and she said, yo, what's the protein powder you guys peddle on your pod? Is it actually good?
Okay, what did you say?
I then inundated her with a bunch of messages explaining how good it was, really trying to show her that it's not something we simply peddle. It's actually something we truly believe in. So
it's not something we peddle. It's like a passion.
Let's just say that there were two gray text messages followed up by eight blue text messages.
Read them all verbatim.
I said, it's the only one I drink. ... I've literally been drinking it since college. Clean, simple eats. The vanilla and the chocolate, it's called brownie batter chocolate, are musts. They have a lot of other flavors too if you're more adventurous. They also have travel packs if you want to try something out before buying a full bag. Then I sent her the links, not even affiliate links. I just was like, no, if you're even considering buying a protein powder, I've got it for you. I've got it squared away. I've got it locked in. Do not look anywhere else.
It is so, so good. This is what we're saying within the privacy of our text message threads and yes, publicly on this podcast. Guys, go to cleansimpleeats.com, use code POPAPOLOGIST for 10% off your order. Cleansimpleeats.com, code POPAPOLOGIST. Kate is her mother. And this is where the Venn diagram between Anne and Gwyneth Paltrow really, it starts, the middle part gets bigger.
Okay.
They are both the daughters of actresses. So I don't know if you know this, but Kate starred as Fantine in Les Mis on Broadway.
Oh, I thought you were saying Anne did.
No, no. Okay, well, yeah. Anne Hathaway would later Chandler star in Les Mis. Not sure where you've been.
No, I know. I was like, you're getting your facts mixed up. Wow, no. Okay, her mom was a Broadway star.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So Kate played the role of Fantine on the first national tour of Les Mis when Anne was 8, which sparked Anne's love for the theater, for drama, Chandler, for telling stories. Anne attended public school where she played soccer and was involved in community class, community drama programs.
Relatable queen.
Relatable queen. But apparently she showed a lot of promise as a young actress. She studied at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in 1993 and became the first teenager admitted to the Barrow Group Theater Company's acting program. I had no idea. They let teenagers into the Barrow Group Theater Company's acting program.
Oh, really? Are you familiar with this?
No,
this
group? I'm not. But apparently, this is like, very prestigious.
You never cease to amaze me. Your knowledge knows no bounds.
Never heard about it until today. So Anne began working as a professional actress, Chandler, on a short-lived Fox series called Get Real, but it was canceled after its first season.
Happens.
And then this is where Chandler... You, me, and Anne have way more to talk about than being daughters of attorneys.
Okay.
Her first real kind of film role, I don't know if you remember this, but it was a small movie called The Other Side of Heaven.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, which was about a Mormon missionary's experience in Tonga.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, everybody, I mean... Were you, maybe you were already, you know, done with religion by the time that this movie was out, but this movie meant a lot to me in the time.
Did it? Do you remember having seen her in this?
Yes.
Well, oh, you do?
Let me back up, everybody. On Sundays, we only were allowed to watch church movies. We weren't allowed to watch secular movies of any sort or secular TV. And so on Sundays, you know, when you just want to like relax, do nothing, lay on the couch and eat a burrito... Mm-hmm. Like I had to watch a church movie. So a lot of times I would watch The Other Side of Heaven.
You would bust out The Other Side of Heaven.
Because I think it was a Disney movie. It was produced by the Disney company or something. So it did feel a little secular.
It wasn't like a full Book of Mormon cartoon.
Yeah.
And it was another one we were allowed to watch on Sundays.
Heavier on like the adventure, lighter on like hard hitting gospel, like Mormon theology. Mm. Okay. But it was about a missionary.
So Anne Chandler did star in one of your favorite movies of all time and something that brought you blessed relief on Sabbaths of yore.
This movie should have gotten an Oscar. Like it should have gone further.
The impact it had on you.
Yeah.
Best picture, no doubt.
I don't know. I actually don't want to watch it now as an adult because I'm sure that I would shudder at some of the stuff. But I loved it growing up. I loved it. Thought it was great.
Well, like, you have Anne to thank for what? You want to keep talking about that?
Sorry, one more thing. I think compared to a lot of like it had higher production value than a lot of the church films that I was watching. And that's why I really liked it. That's all. Okay, I'm done.
Instead of talking about Anne Hathaway and why people like her, why they don't, drama she was involved in, let's get into other stuff you did on Sundays when you had a lot of rules.
The last thing I'm going to say is basically Anne plays this missionary is going on his mission to like, I want to say American Samoa. And she plays his betrothed at home. So she has a very short role, small role, I would say. That's it. I'm done. I'm really done this time.
Okay. I'm not even making a joke about it because we need to proceed. Everyone, it was on her way to go star in this film.
The Other Side of Heaven?
on the way to New Zealand, okay, to star in this film. She had a 26-hour layover in Los Angeles, Chandler, and this is where she auditioned for a little movie called The Princess of Tribeca, okay?
Okay.
And this would be her breakout role in The Princess Diaries. That was the original name, was The Princess of Tribeca.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
there she met director Gary Marshall and the two hit it off immediately. At some point during the audition, Hathaway recalled, I got really nervous and fell out of my chair, and I think that's what most impressed him.
I mean, have you ever gotten so nervous that you fell out of a chair?
It's something like you would read about in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Like something that doesn't actually happen, but writers use it as like little... Yeah,
the physics alone of it are kind of like hard to imagine, but that's amazing.
that's actually a very astute point. Like, how do you literally fall out of your chair?
Right. Just out of nervousness.
Anyway, something.
Girl needs a beta blocker.
To consider, or something stronger. Okay, so clearly the director was impressed by Anne not being able to stay seated because she got the role of Mia Thermopolis in The Princess Diaries, and this really was her breakout role. She proceeded to do, after that, like family-friendly films like The Princess Diaries 2 and Ella Enchanted. Okay.
Ooh, another hit.
Before she started moving on to more adult roles in 2005. Okay.
Okay.
One thing to note, she's kind of a reverse Emma Watson, where she started studying English at Vassar, but basically left school in order to pursue acting. So, and she says she has no regrets, which I actually really respect.
Yeah, totally, totally.
More people need to blow the whistle on how worthless bachelor degrees are. So in 2005, Chandler, Anne starred in a movie I'm sure you have not seen, I have not seen to this day, Brokeback Mountain. Have you seen Brokeback Mountain?
Of course I've seen Brokeback Mountain.
Oh, you have?
You're such a square. I literally... Of course I've seen... I mean, I watched it on our dear friend Lee's couch. Yeah, back in Utah in Provo.
Okay, so...
It's so good.
I haven't seen it. Obviously, it was so forbidden. And in 2005, I was only 15. And so anyway...
You were doing a lot of forbidden things at 15, so I don't buy that for 1 second.
That's true. I guess I just wasn't interested. And in 2006, Chandler, bring it back to Anne, her career.
Yeah.
She starred in The Devil Wears Prada as Andy Sachs. Okay. So I'm not sure if you know this, but Anne really had to fight for the role of Andy Sachs.
Really? Okay.
So this is a quote. She says, I'll give you some tea. I was the 9th choice for The Devil Wears Prada. But I got it. I hung in there and I never gave up.
I wonder who was in front of her.
So I'll tell you. So the director, David Frankel, said prior to casting Hathaway, the studio initially wanted to cast a well-known actress, Byrne, to play the part. Rachel McAdams turned it down 3 times.
Wow. She would have been great.
He says the studio was very determined to have Rachel McAdams star in that movie, and she was very determined not to do it. Kind of like an interesting fact about Rachel McAdams.
Yeah.
And this led me down a rabbit hole, and I spent like an hour basically researching Rachel McAdams and her life. I would love to do a Rachel McAdams deep dive. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do think she's very Erica Jane adjacent in that she's very enigmatic. She's very filled with riddles. She doesn't seem wrapped in cash. But anyway.
Yeah, those two, they're cut from the same cloth. For sure. No,
actually, I think what's interesting about Rachel McAdams, and this is a little bit of a tangent, but Rachel McAdams had this huge breakout success and then basically was like, oh no, this is way too much for me, and left acting for 2 years, which is a long time in the prime of your career.
Right.
She moved home to Toronto, took no projects, and basically was like, I'm not into this at all.
Interesting. Yeah, no, we should definitely do a deep dive. I think every single movie that I've seen Rachel McAdams in, I have loved her in.
I think
she's like an all-star. Even The Time Traveler's Wife, that was just not that great of a movie, she's still the best part of it.
I think also Rachel McAdams is one of the prettiest people that's ever lived.
Yeah.
There is not a flaw on that face.
There's not a flaw.
Stunning.
And her freckle, yeah, she's so cute. She's like perfect. Yeah. Let's stick to Anne.
But I guess we have to keep talking about Anne Hathaway. So we'll save that for another day, everyone. Other actors that they wanted were Kirsten Dunst, Scarlett Johansson, Natalie Portman, and Kate Hudson. I guess
was going to be on there.
Of course.
I knew it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Kirsten Dunst recently gave a quote where she said she would love to do, I don't know if you saw this, but she said she would love to do another Marvel movie. because, quote, they pay a lot of money and she has kids and supports her mom.
Oh, wow. She's also, she's married to the guy from Friday Night Lights and Breaking Bad.
Kirsten Dunst?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Could be another good deep
dive. Marvel movies are cash cows.
Also, you know what else I want to deep dive is Kate Bosworth and her. She's
a lot of love life. She has a lot of passion.
Sure.
The
Justin Long relationship, her 10 carat diamond ring.
I think we're like demonstrating some of the frustration with Anne Hathaway by just literally talking about all the other celebrities we want to do deep dives on.
Okay, let's get back to Anne. Okay, so this is what Anne said about waiting for the role as all the other A-list actresses in front of her turned it down.
Okay.
She said, I just kind of knew that it was the place to be. So I very patiently waited until it was my turn and I got the call. It was the easiest yes in the world. Meryl Streep Chandler had a very large part in helping Anne secure the role. So the director said Meryl was eager to make the movie and she said, let's meet with her. Brokeback Mountain was about to come out and Annie had a wonderful small role in that. Meryl watched that scene from that movie. She met with her and called up Tawn Rothman at Fox and said, yeah, this girl's great. I think we'll work well together. And she had the part.
Amazing.
Yeah. Okay. And moving on from those films though, in the following year in 2007, she had a starring role in Judd Apatow's comedy Knocked Up. She was given the starring role, but then she turned it down because she was reportedly uncomfortable with the film's explicit birthing scene. Mm-hmm. She said, my issue with it was that having not experienced motherhood myself, I didn't know how I was going to feel on the other side about giving birth.
Okay.
I mean, don't you just act? You know what I mean? Do you have to have done everything that you portray? Do you have to be the Princess of Genovia, okay, to play a middle schooler? Anyway, okay, in 2008, a quick little bio. She is in Get Smart, Rachel Getting Married, and then Bride Wars in 2009.
Another hit.
Valentine's Day, Alice in Wonderland, Love and Other Drugs in 2010.
Uh-huh.
In 2011, Rio, One Day. And then in 2012, she was in The Dark Knight Rises and Les Miserables, okay?
Les Miserables.
Yes, and sorry for the list, the long list, everyone, but I feel like it's important to explain her bio, her achievements.
Yeah.
But also there's to get to this point where she plays Fantine in Les Miserables. Mm-hmm.
She actually cuts off all of her hair in that scene.
Oh, I gotta watch that tonight.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
You should tell Kagan
that, reminding
too. I feel like he'd love it.
Okay. So fun fact also, she was originally cast as the lead in the Silver Linings Playbook.
Oh.
Okay.
Wow.
I know. Isn't that interesting? But there were scheduling conflicts, and so she had to pass on it, and it went to Jennifer Lawrence. So this actually brings me to an important point, which is that I think Jennifer Lawrence really portrays and embodies all the attributes that make an actress likable.
Sure,
and she represents an important foil when we're examining what makes Anne Hathaway unlikable. Yes. Like,
it's very true, Dr. Lauren.
Thank you. She does not take herself that seriously.
Right. She trips. She trips.
She's girl's girl. She's very self-deprecating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas Anne Hathaway like falls on the blade of her own sincerity.
Right,
okay?
right.
And she takes herself capital S serious. And I feel like that's what people find to be a bit odious.
Right, right.
You know?
Odious is the word, yeah.
And one of the turning points, Chandler, was for, I think, Anne in the court of public opinion was her winning the Oscar for Les Mis. But before we get there, I think that we should discuss her personal life, okay? Because there's more drama to Anne Hathaway's dating life than
really
yours or mine. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, more than yours.
Let's just say the feds are involved, okay? Because Anne had dalliances with Topher Grace and Hugh Dancy, but those relationships really pale in comparison to the drama that unfolded when she dated Raffaello Folieri.
Okay, calm.
And she dated him from 2004 till 2008. All right. The couple met in New York at a gala for the American Cancer Society, where they immediately connected.
Ugh.
According to InStyle, Anne said it was love at first sight, despite Raffaello showing up an hour late to their first date. This is what she had to say about him at the time. She said, my boyfriend is incredible in a lot of ways, but when it comes to his charity, one of the most untouted aphrodisiacs in the world is charity work. Seriously, you want a girl to be impressed? Vaccinate some kids. Build a house.
Oh my gosh. One of the most untouted aphrodisiacs.
Well, here, I just feel like on some level.
David Foster, that's why he does it for mom.
That's true. Isn't it kind of low-key virtue signaling?
Yes. How,
like, wealthy your boyfriend is?
Literally.
Like, I'm actually so turned on by the fact that he can do philanthropy for small nations.
He has so much money, he gives it away, and that's really hot to me.
He can vaccinate entire demographics.
Ladies, why are you looking for someone with a good, steady job? Look at someone who, you know, who's vaccinating kids.
Jenna, what? Who has Ben built a house for? That's
nobody.
My question.
Not one. Not one.
Not even one. Yeah, exactly. I need to discuss with Kagan later because I haven't seen him vaccinating anyone recently. Mm-mm. So their relationship, Chandler, though, it hit the skids and it ended dramatically when Folieri was arrested on charges of defrauding investors out of millions of dollars. Side note, this guy was super, super, super loaded when he was dating Anne Hathaway.
Okay.
Apparently, they were staying in a $37,000 a month apartment in New York. By the way, this was in like 2004, 2008. Do you know how much money that is?
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Okay. So, yes, their relationship ended dramatically when he was arrested on charges of defrauding investors out of millions of dollars in a scheme in which he posed as the Vatican's chief financial officer.
I just read the Da Vinci Code. That's pretty gripping.
It is pretty gripping, right? So it was reported that the FBI confiscated Anne's private journals from her time with him.
Not her journals.
Exactly.
Those have her private thoughts about her private aphrodisiacs. Aphrodisiacs? I don't know if I'm saying it right.
Regardless of Anne's turn-ons, she was not charged with a crime, and he pled guilty in 2008 and was sentenced to 4.5 years in prison.
Wow.
So here are a few more details on this scheme that I looked up because I was very interested. So in papers filed by the U.S. Attorney's Office, he was accused of lying to investors by claiming to be the CFO of the Vatican and using swindled funds for a trip to the Dominican Republic over New Year's 2005-2006 with his then-girlfriend Anne Hathaway. According to the complaint, Folieri also used the funds for his $37,000 a month rent, medical bills for himself and his then-girlfriend, as well as orthodontist bills for his father.
Wow.
So they dated for 4 years. They split. So this is what Anne said. She said, "It's a situation where the rug was pulled out from under me all of a sudden." I mean, again.
Absolutely.
Her and Erica Jane, they might have something to discuss here. But this is what she said on SNL. She said, "I broke up with my boyfriend and 2 weeks later, he was sent to prison for fraud." I mean, we've all been there, right?
That's funny.
It is funny. Although I will say a lot of naysayers online are like, so she really had no idea what he was doing. Okay.
Right.
So some people are skeptical, but according to, I guess the US government read her private journals and she was consequently abdicated of any wrongdoing. So an auction supporting the victims of Folieri's crimes was made up in part of a $10,500 sapphire necklace he gave to Hathaway, an 18-carat emerald and pearl Cartier necklace, as well as an $8,300 topaz and diamond cuff bracelet. You know, Anne, I would have looked the other way as well. Who knows? That's some good loot.
Yeah, I'm just, her turn-on story is just getting less and less, like,
less and less believable.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was reading about these people's lifestyle or their lifestyle at the time, it was like riding on Gulf Streams all across the world.
Of course.
Partying with Bill Clinton. Right. I mean, like top, top, top elites. Yeah. So yeah, pretty wild. But this is where, Chandler, jewelry really, I think, weaves a golden thread, pierces Anne's heart. Because
okay.
Later that year, she met her jewelry designer husband, then would-be husband, Adam mm-hmm. Shulman. Mm-hmm. So her romance with Shulman began in 2008 and they were married in 2012. So she said, "I knew from the second I met him that he was the love of my life. I think he thought I was a little nuts, which I am a bit, but I'm also nice." She recalled telling a friend while attending the Palm Springs Film Festival. "I was just very honest with him," she explained. "I took my trust out for a ridiculous joyride with him. I told him I need to believe that what happened to me was the exception and not the rule, and that people are good and you are a good person because I feel it." I think that's something you might need to tell yourself. Like, not every guy is going to be lying to investors about being the CFO of the Vatican.
She just needed to believe. She needed to believe
that was the exception, not the rule.
She was so
jaded. Absolutely. She said that she was right. He was the exception. And
Even so, though, it was scary. But she said, as the days wore on, it kept getting better and better. I found that the love I found for him made me more trusting of everyone. And the more I started to see who I had become, the more I realized I had lost track of myself during those years. And I actually started to see who I had become. And that's when things got tricky and ugly, having to forgive myself. Ugh. She added, and he never hurt me. About Adam, ostensibly. Wow. So they went on to welcome two children, Chandler in 2016 and 2019, two boys named Jonathan and Jack.
Can I interject now here with my personal story?
Yeah, please.
Ben and I were walking on the street.
Oh, yes.
A couple years ago, we see a man and a woman and their son who's like riding a scooter in front of us. And the son like goes up to, like they're passing this bodega that's like 4 or 5 blocks away from our house. And he like points to the watermelon, and then the mom said, "We can get some later," or something. And it was Anne Hathaway's voice. We turn and look, it's Anne Hathaway. Like, her voice is very distinct, in my opinion. And it was her and Adam and their son. I don't know which one it was, but it was
crazy. I hate this story because I get so embarrassed for you because she goes, because she was like, comma.
No, yeah, it was like you. She was like, "I can't take a photo with everyone, but I will give you something." And that's when she then spoke to her son so that I could, yeah, experience her being a mother. No, but it just seemed like a very casual, like, Sunday morning stroll for them.
Any bodyguards?
It was crazy. No, of course not. No, it was just – and she lives on the Upper West Side, I think.
You know what's kind of interesting about that, actually?
Yeah.
I feel like it makes me kind of roll my eyes even more at the Italy incident because I feel like if you're Taylor Swift and there are people – no matter where you go,
yeah,
legions of fans will find and follow and bother you.
Right.
Then I kind of feel like the comma attitude is warranted.
Well, that's why the whole situation, yeah, is like a little bit odd is that I'm like, I mean, it's Anne Hathaway. She's an A-lister, but it's not like, I mean, are people really rushing to get next to her?
Well, and
like,
Clearly not if you're walking behind her casually on the Upper West Side.
Right.
There aren't legions of fans. Yeah. She's having to calma with her palma. Yeah.
Calma.
No, I think that's kind of gives me pause on that thing. Also, especially because that incident happened at Fashion Week in Italy. It was like Milan Fashion Week. You know you're going to be interacting with fans. You're in full glam.
Right.
Like, really? Then you're going to act so bothered and patronizing?
Yeah. And it's like, it was just a very weird... I don't know. I feel bad criticizing her because of it, because I think if you're an anxious person or anything, it would be scary to have people be rushing towards you, or at least to feel like you're being clamored by photographers. But also, like, that's the whole reason that you're there. It's like, is for that stepping out of the car moment.
100%.
You know that that's happening.
It's so strange to act like, oh, it was kind of like
she had talked to her therapist about like what type of protocol she should enact with photographers. She's like, I'm going to tell them that I can't take a photo with, or that I can't sign with all of them, but that I will give them something.
I would love them to have something.
I will come to you. You do not come to me. I'll put my hands up in the calma fashion. Anyway.
Oh my gosh. You know what other quote she gave? She said that she sees her fame as a tool of being able to do nice things for other people, like AKA like take pictures with them and do autographs. Yeah. But then she like quickly was like, oh, I probably should have said that out loud.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway. Okay. But before we get to how she has turned in the court of public opinion, let's talk about her charity work really quickly, everyone. Okay. So this is going to be 30 seconds or less.
Okay.
I know everyone's about to hit the fast forward button. So it's going to be real quick. She worked with many charities, including Nike Foundation, Against Child Marriage, Step Up Women's Network, Creative Coalition, St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital, the Human Rights Campaign, and the Girl Effect, to name a few. She's on the board of Lollipop Theater Network. She was named a UN Women Goodwill Ambassador and also collaborated
with women. They hand those out like anything, I feel like.
It's so true. I feel like we should apply.
Yeah.
It would help our image. And also collaborated with women in Hollywood to set up Time's Up Initiative. Okay. Well, that part's concluded. She's clearly not a monster. You know, and
yeah, of course. I mean, but don't celebrities have to do charity work? Not that she is a bad person, but I just like no celebrities' charity work really
impresses you that
moves
much.
Moves the needle for me. Yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, I just think that like once you get to a certain level and you have such a scale of influence, I know this is baby crazy to say, but I almost think it's like sociopathic to not be giving back and not
for
be doing
sure.
stuff. As opposed to a normal people who are just like trying to like work and figure out how keep to like survive,
on. Keep the lights on.
Yeah. Like I think that also with those celebrities, it's not like charities are knocking down our door for how like our, you know, quick appearance could change someone's life or could whatever. Like
literally not one charity has reached out to us.
I feel like yes, exactly. There's probably constant requests. Well,
and it's like what your friends do. Like when you get to that level where you don't really, you don't worry about money or your profession at all, essentially, it's just like, okay, well, how else will I fill my time? I guess, yeah, I would like to volunteer.
Right. Yeah. Charity is a luxury, Chandler.
It's a luxury.
It's a luxury activity. I do that for celebrities. The ultra rich.
For most celebrities. Yeah. It's like,
you're blowing the whistle.
Most of the events that you're going to, it's like, oh, I want to be invited to that gala. Oh, I got to donate. No problem.
And then, you know, you get this line item on your Wikipedia about being a part of some board or trust or foundation.
Exactly.
And then that gets read aloud on a podcast.
On a podcast.
Okay.
Celebrated.
So those are your just rewards. And if you're listening. Okay. So her first crime against public opinion, Chandler, really happened in 2011. I don't know if you remember this, but this is when she hosted the Oscars with James Franco.
I lightly remember this.
And I think this sin, it really, not even sin, but like, it just gets to the core of Anne Hathaway's unlikability, which is that she's just not good at reading, I would say, like, how to deliver things. She's just not, she's kind of a theater nerd. She's kind of overly sincere, almost to the point where it seems fake and like a Taylor Swift, whoa, there's a crowd here. You know, you're her like 15th year into being a pop star.
Clearly she knows how to deliver things because she's an actor. I just don't know that she does like her sincere, just to tell you, Lauren, just to refute what you just said. But I think when Anne Hathaway does sincere, it doesn't translate super well.
Yeah, exactly. It comes off, I think, a little bit as performative and cringe.
Correct.
And this is really what happened when she did the Oscars. So James Franco, his demeanor during hosting the Oscars was like, it was giving a little bit of TJ and Amy, like, and that's a little bit of a niche reference, but it was giving kind of like, he just seemed like he was too cool, didn't want to be there, uncomfortable, did not want to be doing it.
Yeah.
And Anne was giving so over the top, so enthusiastic, so ingratiating, so cloying. It just did not.
They're an odd pair.
They are an odd pair, Chandler. And they were essentially asked to do it so they could appeal to a younger demographic.
Got it.
And despite the fact that Anne was in peak movie star mode that night, dancing, singing, changing outfits no less than 10 times, she was internationally and domestically panned and ridiculed for the gig.
I mean, it's a hard gig too. It's a hard gig.
And this, she basically said in an interview about it, she said she's a theater kid. She said she was playing to the back of the room.
Yeah.
Like essentially being really big for, to play to the audience. She wasn't playing to the screen, like to people watching from home.
Okay.
And obviously, like, I mean, this is going to be sound so basic, but watching someone act on a Broadway stage, the movements, the voice, the gesticulations, everything is so big compared to on the screen where things are much more nuanced.
Mm-hmm.
That's her excuse, Chandler.
Okay. Okay.
So the next turning point, as we alluded to earlier in the episode, also happened at the Oscars. So it was 2 years later when she won for Best Actress for playing Fantine in Les Mis. So the key moment that a lot of people cringed at when she first gets her Oscar, instead of looking up, looking out at everyone, saying thank you, she like has this almost like private moment with herself and the Oscar in front of everyone. And she looks down at it and she goes, it came true. It's just a little cringe.
It came true. She's just a sincere girly.
She's not good at self-policing.
Yeah.
She's not good at being self-aware. She's I think that also, not to be her defense attorney, but I feel like if you get famous quite young, have a lot of success, I think it would be easy to be out of touch.
Yeah, right. Of course. It's like it just reads super strong theater kid.
It reads dork.
Yeah.
Like total dork.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah, and she's just so deadly serious in her acceptance speech, just like, anyway. So this is what she said. This is a quote from Anne about it at the time. She told Harper's Bazaar UK, "At times I wish I could tamp down my passion and just stay a little calmer. I get carried away by things so easily. I get caught up in them. I give everything sometimes without thinking, when thought might be a welcome addition to the circumstances. Sometimes it winds up biting me in the behind, but I don't know how to be any other way." I feel like I have a lot to relate to with me and my spray journeys.
I was literally thinking of you. Yeah, I was literally thinking of you.
This is what Howard Stern said at the time. Or actually, let's just play a little bit of the speech for people so they can get a feel for it.
Okay.
It came true. Oh, thank you so much to the Academy for this and for nominating me with Helen Hunt, Jackie Weaver, Amy Adams, and Sally Field. I look up to you all so much, and it's just been such an honor. Thank you. There are so many people whose generosity and support is the reason that I'm standing here right now. I must thank Hugh Jackman.
I mean, it's just very breathless. It's very. Sure. I think honestly that Oscar speech would have been a nothing burger, but combined with the moment of being
that
like,
it came true,
that it came true.
That's a moment where you just say that in your head.
Yeah, save it for when you're not on stage.
Yeah,
exactly. From when the lights have been dimmed. So this is what Howard Stern said at the time. He said, "Let me sum up why people hate Anne Hathaway. First of all, she gets a speechwriter to write her speech. She's overly dramatic at these award shows. She's always out of breath. She's even acting like she's winning an award."
I mean, there are plenty of people who give very sincere, like out of breath award speeches. I don't think that's a crime. I don't think, and that to me is not a turnoff.
She just rubs people the wrong way. And I think that to some people, she doesn't strike them as genuine. She strikes them as performative.
Right.
Okay. So this is her quote about the kindness she can do as being a celebrity when she sees other people.
Can I just say one thing really quick?
Please.
Anne Hathaway is the friend that when you are all singing along to a song, she's like trying to harmonize. That is who she is.
When you're singing, she's the friend who, when you're all singing to a song, do you mean by harmonize, like show that she has a good voice?
Yes, she's actually singing. Exactly.
She's not trying to like,
actually
she's singing.
She's not
singing.
And it's not even like, she doesn't know any other way to be.
She doesn't know any other way, Chandler. Okay, how dare we try to dim her light?
Right.
So this is what Anne has to say about how the power of her celebrity can really be like the warmth of the sun when it comes to meeting other people.
Oh, God.
Tell you they love you, or that they like you, or that they watched your movie 3,000 times, or they want a selfie, or they want a hug, or they want a picture, or they want a picture for their daughter. All they are saying is, thanks. You know, like, that's all they're saying. It's not complicated. It's not bad. It's actually immensely flattering. It's beautiful. And there's a very good chance, you know, you'll just leave the interaction and you can just focus on the next thing. There's a very good chance they might remember that forever. Mm-hmm. So do you want this memory to be one that makes them feel badly about themselves, or do you want it to be one that makes them feel great? Because the reason you won the lottery is because they bought a ticket. So please be respectful of that. And then I just have this really light relationship with it now. I feel like my fame is a tool to make other people feel good, you know? What am I talking about? I'm not supposed to say something like that out loud.
Everything was great until the very last part. I mean, it's a little bit of an annoying conversation. It's kind of one you have with your other celebrity friends.
Right, right.
Not exactly. In an interview. But then the last part, you're just like, I like her. I have more tenderness in my heart for her after this deep dive, or throughout this deep dive.
And I think, to be honest, that's where I'm coming from too. I actually think she's just completely who she is. She's super sincere.
Yeah.
She's kind of like the actor on Succession, Jeremy Strong, who people totally. Just love to ridicule.
Right,
he just
right.
takes himself capital S seriously.
Right, right,
and
right.
And he's very much an actor.
Yes.
And it rubs people the wrong way because, you know, most people, they want other people to make them feel comfortable. They don't want to hear about Anne Hathaway's celebrity.
Right.
They don't want to hear about like all the great parts of her life.
Right, right.
And how she can just make people feel special and have a memory they'll remember forever. Like you seeing her on the fucking streets of New York, you know?
Yeah.
Let me tell you, Chandler, not the first time you told that story on this podcast.
I know. It's not the first time. I'm remembering it forever. The reason she won the lottery is because I bought a ticket. I do like that expression.
You know, for sure, that didn't come up with that one on the fly.
No, but for sure not.
I guess my point is like, I think that people want a Jennifer Lawrence. They want someone who they feel like is like them,
bumbling,
who watches Housewives,
yeah,
who trips, who is like their BFF.
Yeah.
When Anne Hathaway, I think, kind of doesn't play that game at all.
Right.
Like,
right.
She doesn't pretend
she to doesn't be super do the relatable thing. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. She yeah. just and she's a little she awkward is. And she's awkward.
And it rankles people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is rankles even a word?
I don't know.
I don't Wrangle? Know.
Wrinkles? Wrinkles? Wrinkles?
It bugs people.
It totally you know? Bugs people.
And I think that's warranted. You know, and I think, Chandler, we could all do with a little appetite for not having everyone have to be your BFF as their brand.
You know, the reason why we get these amazing films with her is because this is who she is. Completely. Sometimes you can't have your cake and eat it too.
You absolutely cannot. So I guess now we are turning into Anne apologists, but this is what Anne has to say about finding out about the haters and how it impacted her, Chandler.
Because she didn't like know?
Well, at one point, she didn't know that there were so many Anne Hathaway haters.
She took a bite of the apple.
Yes.
Yeah, I had I'd gotten out of the habit of Googling myself because that's just a bad idea mm-hmm. to ever do that. And I was trying to come up with my friends and I had an idea for Funny or Die, and we wanted to like do something on celebrity pregnancy rumors. So we just Googled pregnancy rumors, and then the story came up. And
what was the story?
The story, the title of it was, Why Does Everybody Hate Anne Hathaway?
So I think, and you know,
okay.
I know.
It's really okay.
No.
It has a happy ending.
I know.
Life continues.
Yes, but I know what that feels like. And I think when people write
up,
things
Ellen.
Like that or say things like that, it is cyberbullying. And so how did you deal with all that?
Well, I listened at first. And that, I couldn't help it. You know, and you try to shut it off and I couldn't, and then I realized why I couldn't was I hadn't learned to love myself yet. I hadn't gotten there. And if you don't love yourself, when someone else says horrible things to you, a part of you is always going to believe them.
Yep.
And so then it was like, okay, I don't want to believe these people. Mm-hmm. I don't want to agree with them on any level. I want to, and I want to figure out who I am. I want to learn who I am, and I don't want to feel like I'm fragile every time I leave the house because I'm so dependent on what other people think about me. Mm-hmm. So I just took a step back, and as Matthew McConaughey, my co-star in Interstellar, would say, I just kept living. And it's been a really cool journey, and I feel like I've arrived in a place where, you know, maybe not every minute of every day, but way more than I used to, I have a tremendous amount of love and compassion for everyone else. And best of all, I have it for myself, which I've never enjoyed before.
I'm clapping. I'm in the audience. I'm clapping.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I love that for her. I love this journey for her. I fully support Anne Hathaway. I fully support her journey. But there's just something so Anne Hathaway about being like, I just looked to my co-star Matthew McConaughey and I just kept living. And it's been a really cool journey for me.
The part that's so Anne Hathaway is that she goes, in turn, I had a lot more love and compassion for everyone else. Like reading the hate online about her made her have a lot of love and compassion for everyone else. And then, you know, of course, for myself. It just, yeah, this is who she is.
This is who she is. And I think that my verdict is that Anne Hathaway is just too authentic for people's liking.
Oh, that's
she's
probably
too herself.
True.
She's too earnest. She's too sincere. She actually is just sincere enough to have that Oscar moment
and
say it out loud.
Right, right.
And that's what bugs people. So anyway, I feel like I leave this deep dive pro, not a Hathaway hater, pro Anne.
No, and I think what you said earlier is true, that we should have a little bit more of a stomach for super sincere people. You know, and what am I talking about as well? Like, Jennifer Lawrence can be kind of annoying because sometimes even the relatableness can feel performative.
I actually appreciate, I think, people who are honest about not being just like you or me, you know?
Right, exactly.
Who really do go for things and who really do strive and who do take things seriously. Like, I just think that's a cool part of being a person.
Yeah.
And I just feel like the need to be cool and effortless and to never be someone who can work towards something publicly.
Yeah.
I feel like because you don't want to
look like you're trying.
Look like you're trying because that bugs people.
Yeah.
I just think that's dumb.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So anyway, we side with pro Anne on this pod.
Yeah. I don't think that there's anything. Like, there's no shadow side of Anne, in my opinion. She just is who she is.
No, completely. Exactly. And I think that there's no shadow side of her. And honestly, like, I have a ton of empathy for someone who really was working hard in formative years, who really carried a lot of these movies. Princess Diaries is not this like cult classic because Anne Hathaway's performance was C-level, middle. Like, her charm oozed in Princess Diaries, oozed in Devil Wears Prada. She was so good in Les Mis. She actually is a master at her craft. And so, so I have a lot of empathy for someone who works so hard. And just because they don't hit the perfect note people want, they get ridiculed. I think that would be a very unpleasant experience for her. I'm sure it was.
Here's another thing. That video of her dancing, it's a little bit awkward, but I don't want any videos of me dancing.
No. Oh my gosh. Absolutely not.
There's that one that from us at Blackberry Farms. I hate it. I absolutely hate it of myself. I like to dance, but I don't ever want to see footage of it. Do you know
the one Angie took?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
That was a video we did for Angie because we love Angie. But I don't think any of us really want to be dancing on Instagram or TikTok.
Yeah. It's. I mean, maybe unless you are a dancer, where you're just not, you know, we do not have rhythm.
Which none of us are.
You know what's funny? I don't know if you ever felt this way, but I used to feel very nervous dancing in front of boys I liked. Do you ever feel that way?
On this Anne Hathaway deep dive, I did not know you were going to bring this up, this fun fact about you. And I'm just saying that.
Because I think I feel very sometimes awkward about my own dancing. Like, I feel like I'm in my, I get in my head. But I don't, I don't feel awkward dancing in front of Ben. So there it is. Have you ever felt that way?
No, I think you just have to be in a state of mind where you don't care. You know, if,
for sure. And you have more self-love, maybe.
I just know how to get there, maybe more than you do.
Yeah, totally.
But if I'm dancing, I am fully not self-aware at all.
But not necessarily, not like pre-Kagan, like being in a great relationship. Do you ever feel that way in front of like new flames?
Honestly, I just don't remember environments where I would dance with new flames.
Yeah, that's true. You're like writing poetry or some shit. Annoying. So annoying.
Okay.
Is there anything else about our dear girl?
Okay. So there is one final moment for the Hathaway haters who are listening, who are like, we did not get the verdict that we wanted to be handed down. Right. I'm going to leave them with this on this deep dive of Anne Hathaway.
Okay.
She had this moment with a reporter on the red carpet. I'm actually very interested for your take in it.
Okay.
Sitting next to Anna Wintour at the Michael Kors show where you recreated that look.
Have you guys ever spoken about the movie?
Yes.
And when has she shared?
Why would I tell you?
Because I'm a fan and I need to know.
Oh, very odd.
The interviewer asks, she says, you were sitting next to Anna Wintour at the fashion show. Did she say anything to you about basically alluding to the Devil Wears Prada, about the movie? And she said, yes. And she said, what did she say? And then she goes, why would I tell you? And then the interviewer's like, well, because I'm a major fan and I got to know. And she's like, yeah, but you weren't there. I will say it's a little
so
rude.
Weird. It's totally rude. It's like,
it's very condescending.
That's when Anne, when she can't fake it, it really like doesn't do well for her.
Correct.
Like, she wasn't like, that'll stay between me and her forever, you know?
Exactly. Like, exactly.
Yeah.
Or she's very ready to star in 2.0.
She looked like she was also just not necessarily enjoying the interview at all. Like, her expression going into it.
It's a short clip. Who knows if the interviewer had said something before that was rude.
Right.
It was funny. When I was on my Rachel McAdams deep dive on my own, I was watching this interview and she's getting interviewed for this film. I forget which one, but just this random film.
Yeah.
And the interviewer is like, did you know that Ryan Gosling was also up for the lead male character in this film?
Yeah.
And it was just so funny to watch her just like have to navigate that question.
Right.
You know, like, 15 years after they dated, basically, or 12 years or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of a recent interview. And the interviewer was like, would that have been something that you would have wanted to work with Ryan Gosling again?
Oh my gosh.
Can you imagine?
So, no, it would be so annoying.
It would be so annoying. Although she managed to answer so gracefully, so kindly, but like didn't give
that deep dive
or anything. Yeah,
we
need that deep dive. Okay, Chandler, well, that was a wonderful deep dive through the psychology of Americans and Anne Hathaway.
Great
Thank you so
job.
Much.
Excellent job. I really appreciate the balanced research and, what you're doing for journalism at large.
I do what I can.
Everyone, please don't forget to enter the giveaway this month. We are running a $500 shopping spree giveaway. All you do to enter is share your favorite episode of the pod on your stories and include a link so your followers can easily tap that link and listen to the show. And then don't forget to tag us so that we will write back that you're entered. And then you can be entered to win $500 to shop till you drop. Love you guys. Thank you so much for being with us today. And we'll be back on Friday on Patreon.
Bye.
That's all for now, folks. Don't forget, give us a 5-star review, hit us up on Instagram at PopApologists, and we will see you next week, live every Wednesday.